Okay, first of all, I am really impressed at how many people came because it's cold. This is our fifth one, and that's amazing, especially with today's political climate. I'm so lucky that we live in a community that we talk to each other and we get to know each other. And I think that we may not always agree with each other, mostly we don't, but when you actually know something about somebody and their lives, it's really that much harder to hate them. So when I was thinking about themes for this, I was thinking the new year, and my first thought was quitting, because we're all quitting something in the new year. We're gonna quit like drinking or smoking or eating fried foods or anything that's fun. And you know, like by January 2nd, we're like sitting on our couch binge watching Gilmore Girls, like in our underpants, eating hamburger helper straight from the skillet. Not that I do that, but I've heard other people do. I work out. I swear. But when I talked to, and I was trying to get speakers for this, like nobody wanted to admit they're a quitter. And the whole thing is like, I don't either. Like, I'm not a quitter. Like, I played clarinet for like 10 years, even though I knew I hated it by the second class. Like, I just didn't want to quit. And sometimes quitting is the best thing to do so you can move on and let go and do something you actually like with your life or your time. Like, it seems so simple. Like, if somebody's mean to you, go hang out with somebody else. If you don't like doing something, go do something else. But like, I'm 35 years old and I'm barely wrapping my head around this. Like, it's so hard. So I did what I always do when I'm having a personal problem. I created a community event around it. Because my ego, my ego is really that big. That's what I do. I have a great lineup of speakers, some really brave people have agreed to talk. So I'm gonna get started. My first speaker is a really great girl. She's got an incredible spirit and she's really involved in our community, and I see her trying new things. If it doesn't work, she just tries a new one and throws it all up there against the wall, and it's kind of awesome, and that's the kind of person I wanna be around. So I'm not gonna quit her. So Autumn Starr, do you wanna come to the stage?
That was a good introduction.
I'll take that.
So I'm going to set up here, and I've got a little map that you won't be able to see at all, but I'll put it out afterwards also. And it's a map of Indonesia. And I put it out because often when I talk about Indonesia, people don't actually know what it looks like or often where it is. It's below Thailand. It's going to be really hard to see, but that's okay. You can look at it later. So, hi, I'm Autumn. I'm here to tell you a story about moving on and quitting. I've got notes. I probably won't use them, but I haven't been up in front of a group to speak in a while, and I was like, maybe I'll, like, freeze and forget everything, so we'll see what happens. So... Good spot. Hi there. Good. I went to Indonesia for the first time in 2010. And it was one of those trips that kind of boggles your mind and stretches you in ways that you haven't really been stretched before. It was my first time traveling outside of Western culture. And I went with a woman, Nadine Hoover, who'd been traveling to Indonesia for years and could speak both English and Indonesian, but she didn't do a lot of translating. And I knew not a single word of the language when I went. And I was there for a month, and we spent a good chunk of our time up in a village called Barak Induk. And we stayed with this one family. And one of the big pieces of that time with that family was playing with language, in particular playing with nonverbal language, and what it was like to take words out of the equation. And it was during this time that I really realized also how much words can get in the way, right? That often we speak and we have to think about what we're gonna say, or we're judging someone else's words, or how do we go about having a conversation.
And it just eliminated this whole, what can be a barrier, right? And left the space where really what we had was just being together. Through smiles, through laughter, through that kind of like awkward space that you sometimes are in with people. And through expression, right? Through our bodies that tell so much about what's going on and our faces. And it was during this time that I really kind of saw and it hit home in a different way. I'd always been interested in body language, but of how universal body language is, that it is one of those pieces of being a human that everyone has. And like the pieces that are, you know, needing water and needing food and wanting shelter and those things, right? That we all have in common. And it was this really powerful thing to be in this place where I had no shared language. I couldn't have a conversation without help verbally. And yet, I was feeling more connected than a lot of people that I am connected to in the US. And it kind of got all summed up in one interaction that I had with my friend Ida, who was the mother of the family that I was staying with. And at the time when I was traveling in Indonesia, I was eating no meat. And there was this interaction that I had with Ida where she offered me this container of what looks like kind of a puffed up cracker. It's called a krupuk. And I kind of took one and I like was looking at it. I have no clue what it is, right? I'm looking at it. And I kind of like look at her like, huh, what's this? And she's got this like glint in her eye, right? There's like, and there's this little smile and I'm like, I look again and I look at her quizzically. And I just see that glint and I'm like, I'm not so sure about this. And I walked out to Nadine and I go, Nadine, what's this? And she goes, it's fish. And Ida has this huge grin on her face. And she's just laughing away. She is so pleased with herself. And it was in that moment that I actually felt like I had become part of the family. Right? It's that interaction where you've gotten to this place where you're kind of comfortable enough with someone to like pick on them and tease them a little bit, right? And we'd gotten there and we'd never actually had a verbal conversation before. And this hit me in this way, including her expression, right? I could read in her eye that something was up here. And she knew, without hearing me ask Nadine what was going on, she knew that I suspected something. She could tell. She was so happy. So this was this really big piece for me of kind of exploring verbal language versus body language and that what are the basic human things that we have that everyone has. No matter where you go, there are some basic things. We all understand what anger looks like, right? What surprise is. So this was one really big piece that it was just, I was eating it up. Another piece was this village, Barak Induk, and a few of the surrounding villages were actually made up of a community of people who were, at that point in time, displaced people. They had been run out of Aceh during the war that happened between Aceh and the Indonesian government. And it was a community in a way that I had never experienced or seen community before. And what I saw was this reality for them was that they had to leave their homes with the skin on their backs and the things that they could carry and the people who were walking beside them. And that was it. But what they came through with was this understanding of how we need each other to survive. That literally they would not have survived without each other. And they went up into the mountains because they had nowhere else to go. There wasn't space for them anywhere else. And I was dumbfounded, really. Not by the pain of their story, although this held a weight that I've never really seen, but the strength and the power that they had coming through that story. And what I saw happening there was this kind of like this power of feeling that they'd been and experienced so much pain that you could see that the way they laughed was not the same as the way they laughed, that I laughed. They had this like this whole different understanding of what joy was, right? Because they knew a different kind of pain. And not only did they know this pain, but they couldn't turn away from this pain. They couldn't pretend like it wasn't happening. They were living it, right? And these two pieces, I was being witness to and kind of participating in on the side, and felt so incredibly honored just to be able to be there with them. And simultaneously, I was also learning a lot from Nadine about the US and its relationship with Indonesia, which is one of those relationships that is not one of the ones we want to hear about. I was learning a lot about, well, the effects of like the US, the fact that the US funded both sides of this war and provided weapons for both sides of this war, and was a big part of the coup when the coup happened in 1960 in Indonesia, that we were part of funding it, we were part of providing weapons, we provided a very long list of the communists that could be, should be, and could be killed to the groups that were doing the killings. And all these pieces, right, I'm learning about all these pieces that are really painful and really hard to look at and are happening all over the world, right? The US is a place that has a large impact because of the power and the resources that we hold, and really seeing myself in this equation as I'm here with this community and these people who have become my family now. They've become people who when I talk about them, I call them my Indonesian family. And seeing this relationship with them and this power of feeling that I'm experiencing with them, that they carry with them, and at the same time, this power of exploitation and misuse. And what I really realized in those two things is the relationship to destruction and pain. And that was the difference that I was seeing, that in Indonesia and in this community that I was learning from and being able to participate with, that they had to look at pain and face pain in a way that in the US, it's so easy and so encouraged to look away from. And I decided in that moment in Indonesia, being there with this community that was blowing my mind, that I wanted to quit and to move on from this behavior that is being ignorant. And kind of shutting down, right? That in some ways I feel like that ignorance, being ignorant to pain and destruction, which we're all a part of in these, whether it be in these big ways that we are as a culture and a community, as a people, but also as these small ways sometimes, right? Like there are ways that I communicate with my friends sometimes that's not really that helpful. And sometimes it's easier to say, oh, I didn't really hurt you, you were just being sensitive, right? Or these little things that we do that ultimately are being ignorant to how we participate, and that I wanted to move on and quit that behavior and actually live in this space that I was seeing my Indonesian family live that was so alive and in many ways facing pain, and that the opportunity to be that alive and live in that space only came from also being able to feel the depth of the pain. And that was what gave you that big, full laughter too, right? Mm-hmm. And so I came home wanting to change my behavior ultimately, but begin by changing my perspective. And that's my story.
Okay, that was awesome. I mean, I really like hearing about people from Naples. They say we're a small community. And when I tell people I grew up in a small town, they're like, oh, it must have been really closed off. I'm like, no, we're the biggest bunch of weirdos. Like, we go everywhere and do anything. Okay, so I'm going to read a couple of things. When was a time you didn't move on when you should have? I gave up as a manager of a community paper to play full-time rock and roll. No one thought it was a wise move, but I did. All right, when was the time you moved on when you shouldn't have? Can't think of a time when I shouldn't have. Okay. When was the time you did move on when you should have? Stayed at a very stressful and traumatizing job. Yeah, we've all done that. We need money, right? Moved on when you shouldn't have. When I moved on accidentally into a parked car. time you did move on when you should have, I kept pegging my jeans even though it went out of fashion years before. Yeah, I did that too. I used to like duct tape mine and then put socks over them. It was terrible. When was the time when you moved on when you shouldn't have? My first true love. Screw that. When was the time you moved on when you should have? When was the time you didn't move on when you should have? Every boyfriend I've ever had. Okay. That's on a good note. All right, so this next speaker, I met her at a craft party. Actually, it was Carrie's party. And across the table, there was this woman with bright blue hair and piercing blue eyes, and she seemed like a really interesting person. And I'm like, I want to know this girl. And she took me home that night and taught me how to make kombucha, as you do. And she's turned out to be a very interesting person and someone who I'm really glad to be friends with. So I'd like to bring to the stage Linda Pownell Carlson.
Well, hello, I've never been up here before. And I don't know, is this working?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should raise it up, reach down to where the
this thing is? Like that?
Yeah.
And what if I want to take it off?
You can do that too.
Yeah, like this? Okay. So my name's Linda Pownell Carlson, and moving on and letting go is so appropriate for me right now. Many of you know of me as an artist with Carlson Glassworks, and I'm moving on to doing a different project. And I might have to look at my notes because I might freeze up on you. So I was thinking about moving on and letting go, and what does that mean to everybody? What is moving on and what is letting go? So when I was a child, I had these amazing parents that nurtured me in an artist way. I was given a roll of paper that was 12 foot long and endless that I could draw on. I was so content with that. So lucky for that. So moving on, do I want to move on from that memory? I don't think so. It gives me great pleasure. It nourishes me. It comforts me. So we all need to keep some of those moments in our hearts. And I never envisioned myself up here in front of all of you. But my new project might require me to be up here and speaking to you. I'm engaged in a new project that causes me to move on to be able to talk to you. And it's a very personal, touching, emotional point that I have not really enjoyed to share with people. This is uncomfortable for me. I'm working on a documentary film with a producer, Alex Lambert, and we're making a documentary film about my father. How long does this reach? So I did bring something because I wanted props. Being an artist, I want props. This is a picture of my father. Our family had a tragedy dealing with my father. this tragedy occurred a long time ago. So we talk about letting go. Tragedies are hard to let go of. My father was murdered. August 1973, the 30th day. That day changed my family's life. We lost the nucleus of our family. I'm sharing this because this documentary film is going to be about this subject, and I need to learn to talk about it in front of people. My dad was an amazing, creative man. He had a great laugh. I will never forget that, and I don't want to let it go. I'm lucky enough to have a film clip of him with him laughing. It brings tears to my eyes, but it brings joy to my heart. My mother and father had a loving relationship. They had a partnership. They made commercials and made a movie together. My dad was making his second movie when he happened to meet up with the wrong people and set up a movie company with the wrong person. And this is where the tragedy takes place. My dad was murdered for insurance money of $400,000. I was 16 years old. And this was a hard place to be. Emotionally, physically, I can't think of any other way. It was a difficult point. There were three trials. They found the people that murdered my father. They found the gun that murdered my father. But as in our court system, not everything is admissible. And so they were acquitted. I'm not happy with that outcome. It took me a long time to figure out and release problems from that verdict, basically. I look back and I'm like, how could they let the murderers go when they had the gun? A sheriff sold the gun to the murderer, and that was all brought to court. But you can't keep holding on to these thoughts that keep rolling in your heads. You have to let them go. You have to move on. You can't harbor this pain. So for me, I have to let go so that it doesn't hurt my being. I have to just accept the reality of what happened. And in making this film, it is a next step of the circumstances to moving on. And letting go. So if anyone is interested in this story, Alex Lambert has made a storyboard, and you can check it out on your cell phones. It's called Hello, Fat Larry. even though my dad's name was not Larry, .org. This is John Pownell, my dad. I miss and love him still, and I always will. And I will not let that go.
You believe she was scared to speak? She did awesome. Thank you, Linda. Okay, so, as you know, we read a few of these every time. So when was a time you didn't move on when you should have? Every job I've ever been fired from. Well, that's them making you move on. So I don't know about that. When was a time you moved on when you shouldn't have? Leaving Alaska. I hear that one. I've always wanted to live there. Let's see, what's this one? When was a time you moved on when you shouldn't have? I left a nice dehumidifier at Maureen's house. Oh, no, Maureen's yard sale. I always regretted not buying it. Okay, I'm over it. I should have quit my job 20 years ago, but I didn't. I always overstay my welcome. When was the time you didn't move on when you should have? Big Dick Gary. I moved on, but not soon enough. Again, we've all done that. Okay, let's see. Time you should have moved, when you moved on when you shouldn't have, when I kept cutting a few more hairs here, a few more hairs there, and then another half inch there, and then there's stray hair there. Oops. Too many layers there, oh God. Now make it even there. Okay, yeah, bad haircut. We've all done that. Like, I spent like most of the 90s trying to give myself bangs and then crying. And when was the time you mentioned 5 minutes before the big buck walked under my stand? Okay, hunters. Okay, I don't get that, but sure. When was the time you didn't move on? The time I came home to all my stuff piled by the door. There's a lot of really unhappy relationships. Okay. Okay, so our next speaker, I don't know if any of you had the pleasure of eating at Kismet. It's a great restaurant in town, and it's fabulous, and it's amazing, and the filet mignon is like butter made out of like meat. And you should definitely eat there. Anyway, I'm done promoting. But the couple who runs it, they're the nicest people ever, and I love their spirit, and I love their trying, and they're doing something so fancy and awesome in a place where you wouldn't think fancy and awesome would be so popular, but we need it here, and I'm so grateful they're here, and they're just the sweetest couple in the world. And the speaker, Roberto, is just a really cool, interesting guy, and I wanted to know more about him, so I invited him, and he's coming up, so go.
No, I actually want this to stay here, actually. So that's the problem. He's got to move this for a second, sorry. And somebody left their phone up here, just to let you know. All right. My name is Roberto Perilla. As many of you know, she just gave us a little nice little promo that I work down here at Kismet New American Bistro. I'm co-owner and co-executive chef there. With my lovely wife right there, soon to be, Lisa Trappas. She's sitting there right there with me to help me keep me calm and collected a little bit there. I tend to rush through things a little bit because I'm a little hyper already as it is. So this is my first time actually speaking in front of a large crowd to where something so personal to me takes place in my life and whatnot. So here we go. I am a child from a descendant of a Spanish merchant, a fisherman and so forth. My grandmother, she is a Puerto Rican Tijano Indian. So I come from St. Croix, a place called Santa Cruz, right next to Puerto Rico. So I am way down to below the equator. So I had a far little journey to come up here throughout my years and whatnot, but thanks to my mother and whatnot, we became gypsies and traveled all around the U.S. So I'm a child of a rainforest. I grew up wanting to be a Spanish gaucho. A Spanish gaucho, for most who don't understand what a Spanish gaucho is, it's a Spanish cowboy. You know, so I tended to grow up my life carefree. I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to do any of that stuff. I just wanted to have fun and be part of nature. And so I guess I fell into a crowd where all these guys all wanted to do the same thing. They wanted to train horses. They wanted to move cattle. They wanted to do all these little things. And City Slickers, for me, was one of the biggest movies that I loved to watch. It was one of the best things I ever seen. A bunch of roughnecks just going outside just to ride some horses. They didn't know what they were doing and whatnot. So I loved that. That was great. And that was one of my childhood's best memories. You know. So due to parental things, things I'm not going to actually get into and whatnot, I had to leave that island. And as a kid, a natural question would come to you. Why do I have to leave the beauty of my birthplace and have to deal with the things that you're going through? You know, you don't want to leave your place. You don't want to leave the beaches. You don't want to leave your horses. You don't want to leave your friends. You don't want to do any of that stuff. So what do you get used to as she's trying to be the best single mother she can be? You just become that strong firstborn. And you learn to let go of all the immaturities that you would want to keep true to yourself as something, as you would consider a goal, you know? So I decided to become the little man of the house and move on and let go of all the little childish dreams that I would want. Personally, because I had other siblings to worry about. One brother, three sisters, and one to come. And one more sister to come. So I took it upon myself to look at myself as the man of the house, the father figure, and so forth like that. So I decided, as that 9-year-old, 8-year-old boy flying over to a U.S., not leaving the U.S., but being that alien, coming to the U.S., the whole new way of life, the way of talking, the school system, and all that stuff. So I took advantage. I took advantage of all of that. I took advantage of learning more that was more beneficial to me and the options that were greater and the avenues that I can take compared to where I grew up. Where I grew up, you have a school system, yes, but it's not as strong and it's not as focused as the ones up here. So I was a child of something else, but benefited off the loveliness and the open arms of this country. So from the teardrop chain of little islands that I come from, this is where I settled. I stopped off in Florida, learned to let go of friends and the things that I wanted in St. Croix. Stopped there first in Tallahassee, a little place somewhere next to the woods and whatnot. Still, she tried to keep it more comfortable so we would have an easier transition when we got here. So she found the most beautiful places to go to as we traveled. So she did her best. I love her. I love everything that she did for us. Then it came to be where other sisters started coming along and the responsibilities got bigger. And then you start feeling the weight of going to all these different states. And you're realizing that all the friends that you gain, you lose. All the things that you want to know, you have to leave behind, or you try to fill in the gaps or the space of that particular piece of comfortability with something else. Either TV, something like, I don't know, like for my example, riding horses or anything like that. Or I dove into the whole strong connection that me and my grandmother had. The culinary aspect of things, the hospitality part of things. Loving family, focusing on other things instead of what I've lost and realizing what I've gained through knowledge and experiences I've been through. So when it comes to my story and when it's moving on and letting go, it's more of a motivational thing for me to let you know what helped me move on and what I had to let go. The things that I would consider letting go is not easy for me because I thought I was destined for something else. And when you think that you're destined for something else, you have a strong belief that you don't really want to let that go. And if you let that go, you feel like you lost a piece of yourself. So I try to stay connected to everything that I love and what makes me feel like I have a family. You know, of course, the love of my life, she changed a lot of things for me. She gave me a foundation, a base to realize that whatever I go through, it's never going to be as hard of trying to obtain by yourself without somebody there to hold your hand and guide you through. The strength that they can also offer you as you walk through life, as you let go of certain things that you would consider dear to yourself. But they're there to comfort you. So the things I would usually consider myself being very beneficial of as I grow up and realize What have I gained through all this? Who am I? Who am I, really? A descendant of a Spanish fisherman? The child of an Antiguan woman that grew up on the islands, free-spirited and so forth? No, I am a child of a hard-working family. I am a child of a different place, but yet home in a new country. I am a child of everyone, and everyone I feel part of. Because we all share the same things. We all share the search for the things that we want most in life. You know, the things that make us more comfortable. Taking care of your parents. Making sure they never go without nothing. Making sure your kids never want for anything. So what I've gained is the knowledge that I can open my third eye. Realize with the travels that I've took and settling down in such places like Texas, South Carolina, being homeless for a while, and trying to finish school. And this is my junior and sophomore year. My junior, sophomore, and my senior year, trying to finish school. Had to turn down scholarships because I didn't have a place to stay. I didn't have a permanent address. I didn't have any of those type of things. And when you're 17, 18, you have nothing for these college applicants and these other offices that would want from you to actually solidify a place in school. So I chose to join the Army. I used that to actually widen my world social studies skills, be involved or see firsthand other countries and how they actually interact with each other, how they spoke, how their governing system works, things like that. Things that you were learning in college and help you address certain questions in life. I took upon myself to learn a different route since I didn't have the financial support or any type of scholarships to worry about. So being a homeless kid, trying to finish high school, turning down and letting go of scholarships to run track and play soccer and do all this nonsense, and realizing that still isn't the path that you're supposed to be going on. This strife that you're going through right now is going to turn you into something else and make you realize you've been sleeping since you were 8 years old. Now it's time to wake up. Left the Army, came down to Florida. Something told me to go off and leave again. But then there's something else that hit me in the back of my head telling me you better stay. There's something waiting for you here. And what happens? Every mother's dream. Oh, there's this girl that I know. Yeah, there's this girl that you know, right? Okay. Okay. Oh, by the way, I need you to pick me up from work. Okay, I can pick you up from work, but I'm not looking for a relationship. I'm not doing any of that stuff. I don't want that. I want to go off and become a sadhu. I want to go somewhere else and become a mentat. Or I want to do something else. I don't want to stay in the U.S. I've been in the U.S. too long already. You know, I graduated. I did what I had to do. I served my country. I did all this stuff. I just want to become somewhere, a monk in a cave somewhere in Tibet. That's what I want. I find happiness in that. I find happiness in some of the weirdest things, like Cheez-Its. I'm a vegan and I love Cheez-Its. That's one of my biggest sins, I think. But you'll never see me do it in front of you. I'll admit it. But still, like I was saying, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go off to be a monk and eat Cheez-Its in a cave somewhere. So I'm gonna go pick up my mom from work. And there's this young lady that was bustling around the kitchen. And one night, she's like, did you see her? I'm like, no, I didn't see her. And she's hustling around. How can I see her? And I don't want to make it so obvious. What are you doing to me right now? You're destroying my whole chi. Go that way. Let me do it my own way. And of course, it never happened. Nervous kid. You don't want to do that. So we went to ceviche. And what language actually worked to hook the woman of my life? And when I, body language. The dance of Spanish music. Something that I hold dear in my heart was actually expresses love. And I express love through food. And the food is community. And community, that's the way I talk to my parents, how I talk to my people. And yes, when I get nervous, a little bit of the accent does come out. So I say things like my people and my family. So me and her are dancing. And yes, I can tell that, you know, she was a little reserved. She was reserved about everything. You know, that thing. You think your mom's slick. I'm like, yes, I know my mom is pretty slick, right? But it's so obvious what she's trying to do. This is the most professional hookup in the world. This is great. I'm like, great job, mom. But still, I danced with her. I realized, I knew, and even when the first time I met her, I knew then what I've gained. A purpose, a direction, a base, stability, support, and anything else that you would consider that you would need to help you move on through life. We lost someone very dear to us when we were in Florida. Someone that was a very strong, strong figure to us that we would consider very pivotal. That he passed, then we had to leave. Not by choice, but through support. We wanted to be right near family. We needed that. So we came up to Hammondsport 3 years ago in a blizzard that I never, never expected to see outside of the Discovery Channel. Ever. I did not realize the sea existed up there. So I went from slippers, running around kicking sand off my feet, to like bearing down and waking up with sore muscles for the next couple years in my shoulders because I'm flying away at snow this high. And I hear my fiance screaming in the back with 15 mile per hour winds blowing through her face and going, this is nuts. What did we come from? What are we doing here? Traveled around. We wanted to open this place here. Our parents told us, yes, check out this place in Naples. It kind of like, you know, fell in our lap. Then we check out the community. We smelt something here. We felt something here. We noticed that that this place is ready for something else. You know, you can't put your finger on it, but you know where it wants to go. You know, and there's just support for it. But it's not, I would consider it, it's not loud enough. It's not loud enough at all, honestly. You can see it as you drive down the street where this place wants to go. And I love where it wants to go. The artistic, the naturalist, the whole environmental, little Paris, little Italy type feel, you know? I love that here. It drives me nuts. It's so creative. And we saw this little, there's a hole in the wall. And we're like, let's put some paint job on it. Let's do this. Let's just go crazy. Let's sink our parents' investment into something that we don't know about that's going to work. How are we going to make this up to them if this fails? You know? We put that aside. What are we gaining from this? Our own way of life, not working for somebody else anymore, knowing where you want to go, knowing what you're doing this for, who you're doing this for, and why you're doing it, keeps us all going in anything that we're doing. Unless you say, yeah, it's for the money, right? Yeah, it's for the money most of the time when NYSAG calls or something like that. It's for the money then. But you know, most of the time it's more for her, watching her eat in comfort, watch her not want for nothing, not want you, yourself not wanting for anything, and realizing that you're a new son, you're a new husband, you're a new lover, you're a new friend, you're everything that you wanted to be, that you thought you weren't going to find when you were younger, and that you lost, but you gained it in a bigger respect. You might have lost family, but you gained a new one. You became a new son. You became everything else that you wanted to be. So with all that you would consider dark, that's happening to you, that you think that you can't move on from, or something like that. You must always realize that the candle that you're looking for, you're always looking beyond yourself when you should be looking right here. You're the brightest burning thing that ever will ever hit the face of this earth. So don't ever let your fire go out about, or let people convince you with these Susan Downer type comments of, I don't know, or maybe that won't work. Why wouldn't it work? Because you're too afraid to try it? Then you let go, and I'll move on, and I'll take that, and I'll keep going. And that's pretty much my story when it comes to me ending up here, and what little pieces of my life what I would consider letting go and moving on, gain and loss, and the love that I've gained from being able to share this with you guys, and realizing that I don't do this really well. So I'll keep trying to do this some more, you know. So hopefully I get to see your faces again and again and again, and I get to see your faces at the restaurant. So please, thank you so much for sharing your time with me.
I know, like every girl in the audience is like, he's taken. Hate that girl. Thank you, that was awesome. I feel the same way about this community. There's something in the air. There's some sort of place we're going together. Just, there's something here that's just so special. Okay, when was the time you moved on when you shouldn't have? I was living in a really cozy house in Corning and I moved in with my boyfriend to Elmira. What a mistake. All right, when was the time you didn't move on when you should have? When I arrived in Eastern Kentucky with another boyfriend and realized I had moved to hell. I hope nobody's from Kentucky. Let's see, just one more. When was the time you didn't move on when you should have? Summer camp, 1997. I'm into camp too. It's always terrible. Nobody likes camp. Yeah, gold memories. Yeah, no. Okay, so our next speaker is someone who probably needs no introduction because everybody in the community already knows her because she does awesome stuff everywhere. And she's famous for being smart and loud and generous and loud and funny and
loud.
But she is such an inspiration, and I'm really lucky that I get to call her my friend. So I'd like to bring to the stage Alex Lido.
Hello. I'll be loud until I get the microphone. Good evening. I've never been up here either. Can you hear me okay? Okay, great. Thank you. So, Sarah's been bugging me since the first series to be a storyteller. So I had these really lame excuses like, I'm hospitalized on an IV line. I really can't do it. I have no knee. I can't do it. So finally, I'm here, and I'm glad. And I was talking to Roberto before we came into the room about the nerves and that kind of thing. And I said, there's no way we can mess up. Did you see Sarah Palin this week? No matter what we say, no matter what we do, we are going to look and sound so brilliant. So I thank you, Sarah. I've been thinking about quitting, letting go, moving on, and realize that we all, every day, let go, move on, or quit something, and we also gain and do things in the course of a day. It could be as easy as waking up and saying, I really want chocolate cake for breakfast. And sometimes we let that go, and you know what? Sometimes we have chocolate cake for breakfast because we're adults and we can. It's milk, flour, sugar, eggs. That's breakfast. It's probably got less sugar than frosted mini wheats or whatever in it too. And if you make it yourself, ooh baby. So, but we let go of some serious things too. I'm sure we all have let go, or should have let go, of relationships that weren't beneficial to us, what I call a toxic relationship. And it could be a lover, a friend, even a relative that just doesn't suit you. And there's different ways of letting go and moving on from those relationships. You can let go by not allowing yourself to be affected by that person. One of my favorite, you know, psychobabble things is you can't change somebody else's behavior, but you can change how you behave towards them. And that really is true. One of the main things, we tend to hold on to things because they're comfortable. And it takes a lot of self-examination, help from others sometimes, research, soul search, to let go of relationships that we're comfortable with or that we really, really think that we should be in. I think it's happened to all of us, most of us, if we're of over the age of 20. I did a online dating service a few years back. I was in my mid or late 40s, and I signed up for Match.com or whatever, and I got some responses, and one gentleman who was also in his mid to late 40s wrote back that he thought I was interesting, but he didn't want anyone with any baggage or drama. So I wrote back, hey buddy, we're in our 40s, if we don't have baggage or drama, that is going to be so boring. Big surprise, I never heard from him again. I do have a way of weeding people out of my life just by being snarky and sarcastic. And I don't think that's a bad thing. But one of the main things I've learned over the past probably 2 years, and especially this past year, is how to let go of pain, physical, emotional pain. I have had a lot of health issues. I really truly don't have a knee, I wake up in pain every single day, and I'm in pain most of the entire day. There's sometimes when it's not so bad, but usually it's pretty bad. And I decided when I first started to feel this way that I had choices to make, and I could let go or I could hold on to the things that cause me pain, and I'm talking physical now, or I could learn how to deal with them and let it go and live life. And I've chosen the latter, to manage my pain as much as I can and to let go of it. I'm gonna hurt. I'm gonna hurt if I lay in bed just as much, if not more, as if I get up and do something. So I've found things to do that bring me joy and probably keep me from being in so much pain. And again, that's the physical thing. I'll go like hours and go, oh, you didn't feel really bad there at all. I really do, but I just block it out. And I take some drugs, but not a whole lot, not heavy duty stuff. I refuse to be on something that makes me a vegetable and not be in pain. I'd rather be in pain and be able to do stuff than not be in pain and be just out of it completely. Well, that's kind of step one of letting go. And then I realized as I was working on that, with the help of a lot of friends, amazing support system. I've got great people, and a lot of you are in this room right here and now that have helped me through so much. That not only was it the physical stuff, but mentally I could let go of a lot of things too. So I've started to clean house with those many, many cobwebs and flying monkeys in my brain. And it isn't always easy, but it sure is fun, and I feel like the journey I am on is making me a better person, and by doing that, I'm able to do things for other people with joy and with just, it's wonderful. I absolutely love being able to help people. And I can't do a whole lot, but there are some things I can do. I can make a mean-ass pot of stew. I can feed the world. I was once told by a boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, that, you know, you can't feed the whole world. Well, you know what? I can. I can feed the world around me. And you can't love everybody. Mm-hmm, I really can. And it feels good. So I let go of a lot of preconceived notions that I think a lot of us here in our society doesn't say that it's a wonderful thing to nurture and to take care of other people and to just be loving. I think, I hope that there are people, especially people in this room, I'm probably preaching to the choir, that know that that is the right way to live your life. And I'm hoping that the world kind of slowly sees that, and I think we see a lot of hatred and a lot of fear-mongering and a lot of stupidity in the world, and it seems overwhelming, but I think, for me anyway, I have to let go of all that hate and not get caught up in it and try to put out love and joy to the world. And that's my story.
That was awesome. She's been an inspiration to me, and Don't fall. Okay. I would like to thank you all again for coming. Again, I think this is such a great thing. Once you know someone, it's really hard not to like them. I mean, the fact that we're all sharing something that's so personal about our lives and we're getting to know each other in such an intimate way, it just says so much about this community, and I'm really grateful to be a part of it. So, thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Oh, wait. One more thing. The next one isn't until April, but the topic is Brush with Greatness. So if anyone's interested in becoming a speaker, please come talk to me. That's it now.
She goes to jail for September. She's a counselor. She's working there. I go to jail in September.
It's like, I was talking to her. She's going to take mine. And it's like, we're so happy.
That's great.
Like
a meeting,
people like
so you just got next week, and then you're going to the new.